If you would please join me in the book of Joshua, chapter number 15 is where we're going to begin today. And we're looking at the land allotments made by Joshua and the high priest during probably the 47th year of the Exodus. And here's my reason for coming to that. We know that right around this time, Caleb expresses how old he was in the second year of the Exodus, that he was 40 at that time. And then he said that it's been 45 years since that happened that we've arrived to this particular year that we're in. So that would put us in the 47th year of the Exodus, because 2 plus 45 makes it 47. So that gives us the date, or the year, I believe, of right around 1410 BC. Probably in the spring of that year is what we're looking at right now. Joshua had spent the last 6 years since their entry into Canaan dealing with the fortified cities of the Canaanites, starting first with Jericho. And he took out 31 of them, along with their kings, first in the south, then in the north. And that gave Israel kind of the core of their land that can now be allotted to the 9.5 tribes that have not yet been assigned a place to live. And we know that Judah ends up with the big chunk down to the south. And we're about to read about that. And that might be related to the fact that Caleb specifically asks that Hebron be given to him, the city of Kiriath Arba, the place where Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and their wives are all buried. A place that has since been taken over by Canaanites, including some Anakim, some giants. And Caleb is chomping at the bit to get in there and get rid of those giants and take back Kiriath Arba for his family and for the people of Judah and for the people of Israel, since the tombs of the patriarchs and the matriarchs are located there. So that brings us then to, as I said, the spring of 1410 BC, when, as the last phrase in chapter 14 said, the land had rest from war. They didn't have to go out and fight against anybody in that year because pretty much all of the key fortified cities of the Canaanites near them have been taken out. Now, chapter 15 up through chapter 17 that we're going to be looking at fairly quickly are better understood in the idea of a map. What we see here is a verbal description of what makes more sense to our Western minds on a map. And so I recommended to you yesterday, you need to get a hold of some sort of map that gives a sense as to where the 12 tribes of Israel are given their allotments. We will read through the descriptions here. Some of it we'll fast forward through really quick because much of it is unfamiliar proper names that mean very little to most of us. And some of them, it's a little bit tough to know exactly where this ancient site was, because as much digging as they've already done in the land of Israel, there is a ton that they have not tried to dig up yet. Excuse me. All right, with all that preamble, let's get started. Chapter 15 of the book of Joshua. The allotment, and remember, these are inspired or divine allotments. They are being divvied up at the direction of God through the high priest in Joshua. The allotment for the tribe of the people of Judah, according to their clans, reached southward to the boundary of Edom, to the wilderness of Zin at the farthest south. And that's a good way to describe where Kadesh Barnea is probably located. If you find what used to be the Salt Sea, or we call it the Dead Sea now, and you go along a valley from there down to the Gulf of Aqaba, about midway down on the left-hand side, there is a little wadi mouth, a little wet weather stream that comes out at that point. And I believe that little oasis is probably where Kadesh Barnea was located. And it makes it the southernmost portion of the boundary of Judah. Now, here are the details. Verse 2. Their southern boundary ran from the end of the Salt Sea, that's the Dead Sea, from the bay that faces southward. It goes out southward of the ascent of Akrabim, that's Scorpion Pass, basically, passes along to Zin, that's the wilderness of Zin, which is where Kadesh Barnea is located. Goes up south of Kadesh Barnea along by Hezron. Now, this is where it now turns toward the west and starts cutting across the northern Sinai. It goes up to Adar, turns about to Karka, and passes along to Asmon. Those are all probably locations in the watershed that drains into the Gulf of Aqaba. When we get to the top of that ridgeline, which we're not exactly sure where it's at, somewhere a little bit south of the Ramon crater. If you've got like Google Earth or some other decent mapping program, you can find the Ramon. It's called a crater. It's not actually an impact crater. It's a geographic depression. Somewhere just to the south of that is where the watershed dividing line is, from water that goes into the Gulf of Aqaba and water that goes into the Mediterranean. And so somewhere along there, we now shift over to the next feature, which is easy to find on our maps. And that is, it goes out by the Brook of Egypt, which we call today the Wadi El Arish. It dumps out into the Mediterranean Sea at Arish. And it comes to its end at the sea. So that's the southern boundary. You go south from the Dead Sea, down about halfway to the Gulf of Aqaba, and then cut across until you get to the watershed drainage system of the Wadi El Arish, and then you follow that all the way to the Med. That's the southern border for Judah. Verse 5, the east border is the Salt Sea, or the Dead Sea, to the mouth of the Jordan, so all along the western shoreline of the Dead Sea, which was bigger than what it looks like today because it's been dried up an awful lot. And then the boundary on the north side runs from the bay of the sea at the mouth of the Jordan, and the boundary goes up to Beth Hogla and passes along north of Beth Araba. Now, that sounds as if you go up probably to the wadi that is south of the Jordan, or excuse me, south of the Jericho Plain. And you can now start following that wadi to the west. And the boundary goes up to Beth Hogla, passes along north of Beth Araba. And the boundary goes up to the stone of Bohan, the son of Reuben. We don't know where these places are for sure. The boundary goes up to Debir from the valley of Achor and so northward. And by the way, as I was doing much more deep, intense looking at all these places here, I have come to the conclusion that what I told you before about the valley of Achor being in the wadi that's north of the Plain of Jericho, it sounds from here as if it must be along this wadi that's on the south. And so I'm going to correct that in my future explanations of this, because I think that makes much more sense by this passage. Because it says then that it goes to the Valley of Achor, and then so northward, turning toward Gilgal. Now, Gilgal is somewhere east of the ruins of Jericho. So that almost sounds as if the Valley of Achor must be to the south and east of Gilgal. Turns toward Gilgal, which is opposite the ascent of Adumim. Now, the ascent of Adumim is basically this wadi that goes south of Jericho and heads up toward the central highlands of Canaan, past a place called Adumim, which is on the south side of the valley. And then the valley, or the boundary, passes along to the waters of En Shemesh, another place. Nobody knows for sure exactly where it's at, but it sounds as if you put this information with other information elsewhere, it sounds as if it might be a water well or spring that feeds into the northern Kidron Valley. And the Kidron Valley is the one that passes along the east side of Jerusalem and the Temple Mount. So probably a place a little bit north of the Temple Mount is where En Shemesh is. En actually has to do with a well or a spring. And Shemesh is the sun in Hebrew. So the well of the sun or the spring of the sun. And then it ends at En Rogel. Now En Rogel appears to be another water site, a spring, somewhere near the conjunction of the Kidron and the Hinnom Valley, which puts it immediately to the southeast of the Pool of Siloam. And so that's my guess for that. All right, so we've now kind of got up to the southwest of Jerusalem. And then it says, verse 8, the boundary goes up by the valley of the son of Hinnom at the southern shoulder of the Jebusite, that is Jerusalem. And the boundary goes up to the top of the mountain that lies over against the valley of Hinnom on the west at the northern end of the valley of Rephaim. Now the valley of Rephaim goes south and west away from the southern end of the ancient site of Jerusalem. And so we're now on our way away from Jerusalem off to the southwest, meaning that Jerusalem is not inside the boundaries of Judah. That becomes very clear later. Verse 9, the boundary extends from the top of the mountain to the spring of the waters of Nephtoah. Notice that there's an awful lot of water sites that are used as boundary markers. And from there to the cities of Mount Ephron. Then the boundary bends around to Baalah, that is Kiriath Yearim. Now this helps us understand when the book of Joshua was still being written, or at least when it was being edited by someone. Because Baalah has to do with something belonging to the Lord. It's a Canaanite word, but the Israelis around the time of Samuel and Saul and David used it to mean the Lord God, the real God. And they gave this name, Baalah, to the city of Kiriath Yearim because the Ark of the Covenant was kept there for a while. And so we can find that on our maps. So that's the next boundary marker. Verse 10, the boundary circles west of Baalah to Mount Seir, not Mount Seir down in Edom, but a different Mount Seir, passes along to the northern shoulder of Mount Yearim, that is Kesalon, and goes down to Beth Shemesh and passes along by Timnah. Now Beth Shemesh, we can find it as well. It's associated with the returning of the ark. That is where the We haven't told these stories yet this time through, but many of you have heard it over and over again. Beth Shemesh is where the Philistines put the Ark of the Covenant on a cart with two milk cows that had babies, and they shut the babies up, and then the two mamas took off toward Israeli territory, pulling the cart with the Ark of the Covenant on it behind them, and they were bawling their heads off the whole time. But it was a supernatural sign that the Philistines wanted to see to know that God, the God of the Israelis, wanted his ark back. And so now we've followed the path from Kiriath-Jearim, where the Ark of the Covenant ended in that story, and down to Beth Shemesh, where the story started. And so we're now down near the level of the plain of the Mediterranean. We're out of the hill country and down on the Mediterranean coast plain. Then it says this, it goes down to Beth Shemesh and passes along by Timnah, which is made famous because of things related to Samson. We'll get to that story. The boundary goes out to the shoulder of the hill north of Ekron. Ekron is one of the cities of the Philistines. It is not yet in control of the Israelis at this time. But the boundary that Joshua is being told to give to the Judeans goes past it to the west. So the Judean territory is going to include territory not yet conquered. That's important to know. Then the boundary bends around to Shikaron and passes along to Mount Baala and goes out to Jabneel. And then the boundary comes to an end at the sea. And then the west boundary was the Great Sea with its coastline. This is the boundary around the people of Judah according to their clans. So this is a huge territory, takes up the southern end of the place of Canaan, the Promised Land. It's got a lot of the central hill country in it. It's got some of the Mediterranean plain. It's actually got quite a bit of the Mediterranean plain, but it's occupied by Philistines. And it's got a lot of the Negev, the southern desert of Canaan, of the Promised Land. And this is going to be the area that the Israelis in the Judah tribe are supposed to spread out into and make their own. A little bit more information. Verse 13. According to the commandment of he who is to Joshua, he gave to Caleb the son of Jephunneh a portion among the people of Judah, Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron. Arba was the father of Anak. Caleb drove out from there the three sons of Anak, Sheshai, and Ahiman, and Talmai, the descendants of Anak. So we read here ahead of time that when it comes time for the Judeans to start taking property that is not yet under their control fully, Caleb is going to take Hebron, Kiriath Arba, from the giants, these three particular giants, sons of Anak. The Arba is the name of their father. Anak is the name of their tribe, which is related to Anakim, making them giants. I've shared with you before, and I'll do that again now. I believe that this is part of what Genesis was preparing for when it said that there were giants in those days and after. So a lot of the giants that came into existence before the flood, these were wiped out by the flood. But the fallen angels, or at least a new group of them, apparently did the same sort of monkeying around with the human genetic code, abducting women. The literal Hebrew says they saw the daughters of men were good or useful, so they took from them all that they wanted. A lot of our Bibles will make it into a marriage thing, but it actually has more of the flavor of abduction. So they do these genetic experiments and apparently produce a superhuman group known as giants. And some of them are very big. The first group was wiped out in the flood. We had another group that apparently God sicked the Mesopotamian kings on them. And then after that, he sicked the people of Esau, the Edomites, on them. And now God is sicking the Israelis on the few that remain. They're right around Hebron. And Caleb is going to take those three guys out. And any others will then run off to the Mediterranean Sea coast and enter into some sort of alliance of protection and service with the Philistines there. And that's why we'll find Goliath, a giant, living amongst the Philistines in the days of David. All right, back to the text here. Verse number 15. Still talking about Caleb, who is from the tribe of Judah. He went up from there against the inhabitants of Debir. Now the name of Debir formerly was Kiriath Sepher. And Caleb said, whoever strikes Kiriath Sepher and captures it, to him I will give Aksah, my daughter, as a wife. And Othniel, the son of Kenaz, the brother of Caleb, captured it. And he gave him Aksah, his daughter, as wife. And when she came to him, she urged him to ask her father for a field. And she got off her donkey, and Caleb said to her, what do you want? And she said to him, give me a blessing. Since you have given me the land of the Negev, give me also springs of water. And he gave her the upper springs and the lower springs. Now, we're going to hear this story again in a little bit. It's in the book of Judges, because what we're doing now is we're seeing an overlapping between the story in Joshua where the boundaries are set up, and then the story in Judges where some of the Judeans actually go out and take for themselves their inheritance property that was still being occupied by troublemakers. And so this is kind of an overlap of material, much like we see between the Kings and the Chronicles. We'll even meet the nephew of Caleb, who becomes the first judge in the book of the Judges. And I'll try to explain a lot of that better when we get over to the book later. Verse number 20, this is a summary verse. This is the inheritance of the tribe of the people of Judah according to their clans. And then starting in verse 21, it goes through a great big list of all the cities, that would be places that had walls of some sort, that fell within the property of the allotment of the tribe of Judah. And I'm not going to read through all these cities. You can read through them on your own. They are divided up into certain regions. And this is a treasure trove for those of us that like to try to work on map material. Because if we know where certain places definitely are, such as Lachish, for example, or Eglon, then we know that the cities that are listed near them in this context must also be in that same region. And so this kind of helps us when we're working on our maps. So we go through the whole list until we finally come down to verse number 63, where it says, but the Jebusites, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the people of Judah could not drive out. So the Jebusites dwell with the people of Jerusalem, of Judah at Jerusalem to this day. So whoever wrote that part of the book of Joshua, whichever prophet it was, in his time period, he notes, because the Judeans who received their territory did not trust God enough and couldn't bring themselves to fight against the Jebusites that lived not just simply in Jerusalem, but also in the region to the south, which is part of Jerusalem, or Jebusite, part of Judean territory. There was a bunch of Jebusites still living with the Israelis at the same time that the prophet was writing this down. And that is the background for the taking of Jerusalem in the time of David, that the Jebusites were still in the land in the time of David, several hundred years after the allotment was given to the Judeans. Now, what's the significance of that? The significance is, even though there were times when the Israelis obeyed God and trusted God and got great things done, such as what Joshua did, it was more often that the people kind of fell backwards from that faith and trust and did not follow through with God's instructions, so they brought upon themselves difficulties that Moses had warned about, that if you don't drive the people out, they are going to stick around and be like thorns in your eyes. They are going to cause you to abandon God and chase after sinful things. And so this is the backstory to all the rest of the story of Israel in the Old Testament, is that because of bad choices at key points in history, they ended up bringing trouble upon themselves. All right, so that's all the Judah information. When we come back tomorrow, we will more quickly go through the allotments that were assigned to Ephraim and Manasseh, and then we will start looking at what the Israelis did once they received their allotments, and how they, some of them, had faith to take the property that God had promised them and make it their own.